mobile is 50% of Nokia's revenues, mobile access. You know, so if it wants to, you know, it needs to have a good 5G product lineup to be successful. You know, and it's not just important for Nokia; it's important for the entire market, because if we, you know, we're in a situation now with geopolitics where Huawei's getting restricted and squeezed out of certain markets for, you know, reasons to do with we don't really trust the Chinese and, you know, it's not safe to use them and all this kind of stuff. So operators only have, unless they're going to start using Open RAN suppliers, new Open RAN suppliers, and that technology, as we talked about a lot before, is very immature, you know, it's still unproven. They've only really got two big choices, which is either Ericsson or Nokia. So
hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. I'm not wearing any glasses today, which is totally different. The first time this has probably happened in about 20 years. I went and got some new glasses, which look pretty much the same as my old ones, so I won't bother debuting them. And then thought, oh, contact lenses, let's see. They had them, all those little daily disposable ones lined up on a rack. And I thought, oh, I wonder what they're like. And apparently they can last for, like, if you don't use them, they can sit around for years now.
Do they cost a fortune?
No, not a lot. I thought about £1 a pair, something like that.
Okay. So if you wore them...
So if I only wear them like...
£1 a month if you wore it every day, but a lot less if you're only doing it occasionally.
Exactly. And I can't bother to wear them all the time. But, you know, for... I can't even imagine occasions. Maybe if I'm swimming. If I ever let out of the country. By the way, on that one, they're now talking about is you can go on holiday if you can prove you've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it now so that people can call me out on it if I ever go back. I am never... going to do anything that requires me to display my vaccine status to other people.
Yeah.
And if that means that I don't get to do stuff, then so be it. That's a hill I'm going to die on.
In a few months, you'll have to display whether it's AstraZeneca or Pfizer. Yeah. In fact, that's already started. I think you can't
and then
get
you have to display it for other stuff. It's a classic thin end of the wedge thing. It's an invasion of civil liberties. Anything that I could do 2 years ago, they're now making conditional. I'm not having it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's why I look weird, everyone. What do you reckon? Do I look...
For the 15 people who watch.
For the 15 people who watch. Do you think just when you thought it wasn't possible, do I look a bit fitter? If so, then thank you. And if not, then I'd rather not hear from you.
Well, the next thing you need to do is change your appearance even more, like grow a massive beard and shave all your hair off.
Or lose some weight.
And that, well, you are losing a bit anyway, so just keep up with that and then grow a big beard.
Midlife crisis complete. And then
Turn yourself into Jamie.
Do a bit of a Matt Hancock. Have a bit on the side. I don't think my wife watches this. And that was just a joke anyway. But yeah, that was today. Matt Hancock's been caught on CCTV getting off with one of his assistants. Mm-hmm. That's quite funny.
Social distancing with her?
Just a bit. Not. Anyway, we've only got about an hour, so I better get on with it. So the other thing we're doing today, apart from me not wearing glasses, is we would normally... I mean, it's at a weird time of year, but in the sort of cycle, we'd normally be... Well, probably tomorrow, flying off to Barcelona just to damage ourselves in advance and make sure the rest of the Mobile World Congress is as painful as possible, which is what we normally do. And so on the way, we popped into Tesco's and decided we don't need to go to Barcelona because we can recreate Mobile World Congress here. So we've got San Miguel. San Miguel Especial, which I only just realised. It's like 5%, so we want to watch ourselves on that. I always have a gin and tonic when I'm in Barcelona, so we got that.
Yeah, more than one, I think, Scott.
I've been known to have more than one.
In those giant glasses.
We got some tortilla chips.
They're not especially Spanish.
Spanish, but this was Tesco, like, local. and then we got...
that is Spanish.
Some bits of Manchego. That Ian just cut up.
It's probably the only real Spanish article on this table.
It's the Manchego.
That San Miguel is probably brewed in Scotland.
Probably is.
Ooh. Thank you.
I'm not eating now because I'm still talking. And then Pierre got a bit confused and got some Reese's peanut butter cups, so I'm not sure what that was all about. He probably just thinks anything that's not French is just
foreign.
He
takes them to Barcelona with him.
It's all the same. Yeah.
Normally. I just like them, yeah.
He just likes them. So, and one more thing. I brought this along just to remind myself to do... We got a bribe of the month, bribe of the week thing, which we haven't done for a while. Courtesy, I think this is not their first appearance on Bribe of the Week, Babel PR, who sent me a slab of Beavertown. Some of them were non-alcoholic, which apparently...
What?
Yeah, I've forgotten. It's one of the people there, a bloke, that says I did put the non-alcoholic bits in. I've forgotten who he is, so you don't get called out.
Beavertown doesn't make non-alcoholic.
Well, apparently it does, mate.
The Nanobot has 2%.
No, there's one... That's really? Like 2.5%. There's one that's non-alcoholic.
Is it good?
I don't know. I haven't tried it, have I?
He won't drink that one. You can have it.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you'll know.
You can have it so you can go on your special bike on the way home. So so happy Mobile Congress. What am I going to have? Shall I start with the
G&T? With the gin and tonic.
You want the G&T nice and cold, don't you?
Yeah.
So happy Mobile Congress. So none of us have gone.
Cheers.
We weren't that sure until it came down to the wire up here.
Up until a few days ago, I was still thinking, should I be going? And just coming back and putting up with the quarantine, but...
Yeah. And did you have any conversations with anyone, or did you just let the clock tick down?
I spoke to you guys about it, I suppose. Yeah. And you weren't that keen, so...
Nah.
I don't know, I will feel as though I'm maybe missing out on an opportunity just to go around and take photos of empty halls and...
Yeah.
I mean, the interesting thing now really is how many people turn up, isn't it? And whether it's, you know, the reports from people who are there.
The Daniel Royston Fest will hopefully be fun. I've seen, you know, they've been sort of spamming out some
PR. Well, that's the main story.
They've got a bunch of people involved.
Yeah.
She's got a few quid, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm sure she will have got some people to turn up. I think AWS is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she might as well just give the whole thing over to AWS. So... That would have been a fun thing to report on.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced now, and maybe next week. In fact, I think we're going to do another one. We might even do it early, because we've got some other stuff going on. We might even do it on Thursday next week, which would have normally been the day when we're limping home.
Yeah.
Just utterly broken by our inability to moderate our behaviour.
And we'd be at Le Glacial.
Yeah, well, it would have been the Glacial the night before, and that normally ends up with some afters going on till about 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So
I'm eating manchego. So
yeah, you're just munching on manchego. You go for it. So maybe we'll do that, and we'll reflect on that one, whether we should have gone or not.
Yeah.
But you were saying you haven't exactly been overrun with like pre-MWC stuff like you would have been
in
a normal year.
I mean, we're going to talk about it in a minute, but
I've
done some of the vendor, you know, announcements, the pre-vendor announcements, which have been reasonably significant. I've got a couple of press releases... press conferences lined up online for next week. Spoke to Orange about some news they're announcing next week. But, I mean, normally I'm busy trying to set up interviews, I think, with people and meetings. And I'm not really bothered with that because you can do that anytime. You know, it's an opportunity to meet people if you go there, but you can set up a Zoom call anytime with somebody. So,
yeah. I'm being the only full-time writer as well as the editor on telecoms.com and being a lazy bastard. I just don't do many meetings at all. Yeah, sorry. I'll mute my computer. Because I can't really do them justice. If you're going to have a proper briefing with someone who's saying things worth listening to, as opposed to what it is 75% of the time, which is someone just regurgitating press release talking points, which is another reason I don't do them, then you've got to be able to transcribe it and properly write it up and do the decent job that you do on your analytical pieces. I just don't have time
it's
to do that.
It's hard to do it at Mobile World Congress, for sure, yeah.
But I don't have time to do it full stop.
Yeah.
So I don't, and that's my excuse for being a lazy bastard. Okay. I forgot to do the thing last week, didn't we? So I'll remember. What we're going to chat about this week, I think we're going to start by talking about Nokia's product announcement. On the surface, boring. They've just got some new stuff. Yeah, whoopee. But I read your analysis. When I wrote it up quite short and sweet. But you did a much deeper dive on it, as we just discussed. You can't be eating Doritos while we're talking, mate.
Bollocks.
It's not going to work.
Producer's shaking his head at me.
Yeah, you know, I know. The packet's all crinkly, the crunchy noise. Right. It's just not going
to
work.
I'll restrict myself to
gin
and tonic.
They're just symbolic.
Doritos.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a prop.
You've had your egg sandwich. What more do you want? Yes, you wrote it up and you reckon it marks a sort of inflection point in terms of them getting their 5G shit together.
Mm.
So, cool. Good for them. And we'll talk about that. We might talk about some other sort of RAN-related stuff. Then we're going to do... Yesterday, the big story was that EE announced it's going to start charging for roaming in Europe. charging its customers for roaming in Europe, which led to not the best PR day ever for EE. Mm.
Shows what a disaster Brexit's been already.
Well, doesn't it? Or does it? We'll find out. Don't go anywhere. And we can talk about that, and then we might finish off a very quick one, because we'll probably have run out of time by then, another little censorship thing going on, where there's a law going through the UK which will give Ofcom power to say, basically dictate what you can say online, full stop, which I think's bang Blimey. Out of.
Who would have thought this government would ever do anything to clamp down on civil liberties?
Do you know what I mean? Or any government, for that matter. Mm-hmm. Don't kid yourself that if Corbyn was in charge, it would all just be laissez-faire. But yes, fair point. So, and just to remind you, as I forgot to do last week, that if you're watching this on the site, you can also see it on YouTube and Facebook. And if you listen to it on iTunes, you can also get it on SoundCloud, Spotify, and other podcasting platforms.
I just realised, this is the last of the month, so I was going to give a shout-out to the city of the month, which is London. London. Then second is New York City, and the top country is still the US.
New York and London, that's what we like. We like the big cities, really, don't we? No offence to people in small places that listen, but it's nice when people in big metropolises are...
We're cosmopolitan, we're hip, we're happening, we're on the zeitgeist, we're on the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
God, I make myself sick sometimes. Right. So let's start off. In fact, I'm just going to hand it over to you. Because I've still got a mouthful of Manchego. Nokia, they just launched some stuff. Why do we care?
Well, I think we care because it's sort of the fruits of all the work they've been doing over the last 2 years, maybe, certainly the last year and a half, I would say, to correct things after making some fairly big slip-ups in 5G that have hindered them and have resulted in them, I think, being perceived to be the kind of laggards in the 5G race, you know, behind Ericsson and Huawei. And you look at what's happened to their share price, partly as a result of that, you know. And it's been bad news. And 5G is obviously the big story in telecom at the moment. Mobile is 50% of Nokia's revenues, mobile access. You know, so if it wants to, you know, it needs to have a good 5G product lineup to be successful. Laggard. You know, and it's not just important for Nokia, it's important for the entire market, because if we, you know, we're in a situation now with geopolitics where Huawei's getting restricted and squeezed out of certain markets for, you know, reasons to do with we don't really trust the Chinese and, you know, it's not safe to use them and all this kind of stuff. So operators only have, unless they're going to start using Open RAN suppliers, new Open RAN suppliers, and that technology, as we talked about a lot before, is very immature, you know, it's still unproven. They've only really got two big choices, which is either Ericsson or Nokia. So to have an uncompetitive Nokia, to have a Nokia that's perceived to be not particularly good, is not a great situation. Yeah, you're kind of falling back on Ericsson all the time.
Mm.
And that's why it's a big deal, yeah? That's why this announcement is a big deal.
So it's a big deal because it looks good.
Yeah, but it's a big deal whether it looks good or not, because it's their attempt to basically be there and actually count.
Okay, so the point is, it's significant.
Whether it had been something they came out with that you went, actually, this is a bit of a disaster, that would have been a story as well. Anything they did, this is a whole 5G product refresh. 5G. This isn't like some little bit of you know, like we're going to do this Cloud RAN thing with someone and it uses this chip. This is the whole 5G portfolio, this announcement, which is why when they were sort of offering up interviews on it, it wasn't some, you know, vice president of marketing that they were putting forward. They're putting forward Tommy Wiito, who's head of mobile
Tommy with networks. They don't know why he's in Finland, do they? It's got to be
wise. Arguably the second most important in the whole company, second most important person in the whole company.
Tommy used to work on the dock. Do you think that was him? Bon Jovi was singing about. Sorry, go on.
Bon Jovi's actually performing at Mobile World Congress.
I know, virtually or physically?
Physically. He's on the stand, he's on Daniel Royston's stand on Tuesday night.
Total fair play to you, Daniel. So, that is...
Well, that's another reason I was thinking I should go.
That is Danielle showing she's got some clout. If she just goes, oi, John, what are you saying? And he turns up.
But the other Tommy was who I was talking to was going on about the refresh. And I think it's... So it could have been bad, it could have been good. I think it's... You know, I took a positive slant on it, partly because my own impression from trying to cover RAN and trying to understand what RAN's about for the last few years was that this seems like they really have sort of done something to turn things around here. And partly just sort of getting an analyst take on it. You know, you want a sanity check, someone who knows this stuff well. I spoke to Gabriel Brown, who's one of our heavy reading analysts, but he's one of the best analysts in the business, really, with this kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously this isn't launched yet. This stuff's kind of I think the stuff they announced on the baseband side is actually shipping. The radio stuff that they announced, probably not till later in the year. So we don't know. I mean, obviously the proof's in the pudding, as they say, you know, until this stuff actually goes into networks and people are using it.
I'm going to be pedantic. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. People always say the proof is in the pudding. That's
okay.
Inaccurate.
When people eat this shit, then we'll find out whether it's actually any good or not. But on paper, it looks really good. You know, the specs they came out with are, it's almost like they've sat down with a bit of paper and looked at all these metrics that are considered to be important these days, where they're considered to sort of be behind.
And dealt with.
And they've gone, right, we need to make sure in every single one of these categories.
So one was weight, wasn't it?
So one was weight, which is actually quite a new thing.
Oh my God, that's so unprofessional. Pierre's audio.
I mean, I can't eat Doritos, but he can do that. I think I should be able to eat at least five Doritos.
First he buys American chocolate instead of proper Spanish grub.
Unforgivable.
Yeah, weight of radio unit is actually quite a new thing. I mean, I've not heard people going on about this
much
until
thing this year,
until this year. But it's become a thing because, so as I understand it, if you have, and this is particularly an issue in massive MIMO, which is basically, it's basically 5G.
It's like certainly really what high performance.
It's the high performance 5G stuff, yeah, basically, that you need for like really super fast connectivity.
Do you tend to do massive MIMO in like traditional licensed spectrum, like low band? Sort of
I think you would use
gig.
It in mid-band, yeah.
Yeah, but not necessarily in the traditional ones that we used to use for old generations.
Well, massive MIMO is a 5G thing, so you wouldn't have massive MIMO. You wouldn't have that number of... So it's basically 32...
But we had MIMO before.
You had MIMO, but it tends
and
to stop...
And we had carrier aggregation. Is it really totally different from carrier aggregation?
Yeah, because it's a lot more receivers and... It's a lot more transmitters and receivers.
So it's massiver.
So it's a 5G thing. It isn't something you'd have got with 5G with 4G.
I should have known that. There we go.
So you're putting, you know, whereas your 4G radios, as I understand it, would have sort of two or four maybe transmitters and receivers. With 5G, you're going up to sort of 8, 64. And then massive MIMO is considered to be 32 upwards. So I think you can go up to 128.
Go on.
But the one that's most popular apparently is 32.
That's the one
and that's the one that Nokia was talking about, because they're saying they now have a unit that's only about 17 kilograms, which they claim is kind of industry beating.
And like Ericsson or Huawei managed 19 kilos earlier.
Well, they
year.
Did, but those figures are actually for those 64 unit ones, which might add a couple of kilos.
You think?
To it. So. Yeah, so...
Either way.
And
that's a big deal in terms of... Because my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is a lot of the reason this is a big deal is because, you know, we're really talking about fine margins here and a cost of deployment. If you need two lads to carry something or some bloke can just stick it in a rucksack...
Yeah, I think whether you're...
And it needs less
equipment. Whether you're 19 or 20 or 21 is probably not that important. But if you're previous generation, where I think... Ericsson, for instance, which came out with its previous generation 64 massive MIMO kilogram weight when it had its own announcement earlier this year, was at over 30. So there's a big difference between 20
and
36.
And presumably the cost of the equipment you have to hold it onto a mast or the side of a building.
So it's a couple of things. It's you need a crane to lift it if it's sort of over 30 kilograms, because it's not something that people can easily lug around.
No.
You get to below 20, you can just rely on people carrying it more. So basically you're using less equipment. Cranes are expensive, you know, it's, it just adds a lot to the bill for deployment, basically. The other thing is, like you've just said, the masts themselves need to be reinforced if you've got heavier stuff on them, which is, you know, another cost. And also you need more, the bigger kind of bulkier, heavier units, you need sort of more, they generate a lot of heat and you need more cooling equipment to sort of take that away.
Right.
So it adds energy, it adds to the energy
bill. It's all about
bill.
Slimming down the whole scenario.
Yeah. Weight's really important. They've done this, they've come up with this spec that people are saying looks really competitive in terms of what else you can get in the market. They've also done something on this is quite relevant to what's been going on in the UK actually recently, which you and I wrote about, the spectrum trading that's happened, where you get contiguous blocks of spectrum, but you might not have
for massive MIMO and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but if you don't have a contiguous block, if you have spectrum which a lot of operators still have. In fact, in the UK, there are still operators that have bits that are
chunks
divided.
That are separated by other people's bits.
I think BT has blocks that are closer together maybe than they were, but they're still separated by another block. You need a radio that can basically handle a very big range. And I think in the past, a lot of these radios have been sort of 200 megahertz. Yeah, the kind of maximum range that they sort of function within. And Nokia's got these new radios, they're now 400.
Okay, so that's another checkbox. We've got weight, we've got range.
Then you've got occupied bandwidth, so the amount of bandwidth they can actually support
at a given moment.
Yeah, at a given moment is higher as well. So those are the main features on the radio side. And it's all single RAM, by the way, so you can put your 5G on the same, you can have radios that will basically support all the different standards. You know, like 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G now as well.
So sort of common platforms type of thing.
Yeah.
So the only thing I'll say, and congratulations, Nokia. You know, if you and Gabe and whoever think it's good, I'm certainly not about to question that. But you know, their launch is several months after Ericsson or Huawei have launched their 5G gear, and presumably all gear is in a sort of constant state of sort of gradual evolution. So it could be, if they wanted to, not that they have, the Ericsson and or Huawei or anyone else.
Well, I don't think the Huawei and Ericsson stuff that's been announced a few months ago, I mean, they're only a few months later, and I don't think that Huawei and Ericsson stuff's available yet. So it's not like they're trade. I mean, this is February.
So they're properly competitive.
Yeah, these are February announcements. We're now in June. And on several criteria, they look better than those companies.
And it's not like they've suddenly...
So I don't see that my personal assessment, and I think Gabe's as well, is it doesn't look on paper like they're in catch-up mode anymore. You couldn't really... I mean, I think the main area where they are still catching up is, and this relates to this, is how quickly they can refresh their sort of entire product portfolio, because a lot of the stuff they're shipping is still older generation, and it's still using some of the chips that they had to fall back on when they had problems back in... Well, problems that were reported back in 2019 when it was revealed that they'd had to sort of make do with these programmable chips that are more expensive, basically.
FPGA.
Yeah, and they're phasing those out, but getting all of them out of the kind of product portfolio is going to take until the end of next year. So in that sense, you could say they are still kind of...
And there are costs, obviously, associated with it.
Because their margins have suffered as a result of that move.
But for investors, for commentators like us... It seems to mark an inflection point where they've got their shit back together.
Yeah.
And they're competitive again.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about them as 5G laggards.
And they've improved the baseband side as well. So their baseband units, they are... I can't remember the exact specs with the baseband units, but again, they've got a series of metrics that they can put next to those and say these are all sort of industry leading. And they're claiming some fairly big advantages over the likes of...
Okay.
I mean, they even mentioned Ericsson actually in the interview I had with them. So one differentiator they claim is that they have sort of plug-in units, which means it's easier to... This processing that takes place at, you know, I don't want to get into the whole sort of layers thing because it starts to get confusing, but there's different types of processing that take place in the network, and they're saying with the Ericsson units you basically have a pizza box, which means you have to sort of upgrade everything, you can't separate it out, whereas they've got these plug-in boxes, which means you can deal with specific elements and not have to spend money unnecessarily on other elements, if you see what I mean.
Yeah,
so it's kind of an advantage that they're saying over the Ericsson kit.
Okay.
It looks, on as I say, on paper it looks good. It's just whether people bite and what difference it makes later in the year, I guess. So we won't know that until later in the year. But on paper, it looks as competitive as anything I've been told.
That'll do. Got some people walking past our open door. Talking about Ericsson, there's another little story this week. I wrote it up with the headline, Ericsson needs Intel Inside. I think you used Intel Inside in your headline.
Yeah.
To support mid-band 5G in its cloud RAN. So my take was that... You know, and some people in the comments have sort of pointed out that they've often, you know, it's not the first time they've used Intel stuff, and I'm sure that's true. I'm not going to claim encyclopedic knowledge on this. But to me, the angle seemed to be, okay, they're going big on...
Who said it wasn't the first time they'd used Intel stuff?
Guillaume in the comments. Nothing new, really. Lots of stuff made by Ericsson already powered by Chipzilla stuff, which implies he's American.
No, he's wrong. He's wrong about that.
Oh, okay, fine.
Intel does sell chips to Ericsson, yeah. But they would be customized. They would be designing customized processors for them that they're using for traditional RAN deployments. This is a virtualized deployment where what the chips they're getting from Intel here that are in this deployment are x86 processor. This is general purpose processors.
As opposed to
the sort of stuff that Nokia got let down on a couple of years ago, which was more bespoke. So you've got Intel's, what they call it, the Snow Ridge range, which are used for traditional RAN deployments that are processors they're selling for, you know, they're competing against people like Marvel in that market. And they'd sort of co-design, for instance, yes, with Ericsson.
So they're kind of helping them out. They call them ODMs, don't they? Original design manufacturers.
Yeah, there's work. They're a supplier for sure, but this is a very, very different situation to that. You know, I asked Per Narvinger about this. He's the guy who's head of Product Area Networks. What are these Intel chips actually replacing? Previously, what they would have done is actually help design their own chips. They'd be customized chips that they use that are very tightly integrated with the software that Ericsson develops. And you basically sell the whole thing. It comes from Ericsson. What you can do now with this is you can just go out and buy a Hewlett-Packard server with general purpose Intel equipment. So Guillaume's completely wrong, I'm afraid.
Sorry, Guillaume. Well, that's good. And I was right, because my first paragraph, this makes me feel better. Because as you know, I often say it on this pod, I feel that sometimes I probably could have done more to fully learn my subject matter in the 7 years I've been doing this. But there we are. I've got away with it so far. So, you know, what are you going to do? But in my first paragraph, I wrote, Ericsson has continued its shuffle towards a commoditized open radio access network. And that seems...
This is virtualized RAN with Intel supplying Xeon-based, their x86 general-purpose server-based
processors.
That you
could just use for anything.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. They're the same Xeon processors that Intel would use for other stuff. So this is the dream of... this is virtualized RAN's like one stepping stone, really, to open RAN, because the next stage is to open the interfaces.
Well, because they brand it Cloud RAN.
Yeah.
And I think Cloud RAN is their way of saying open RAN.
No, it's not open RAN.
Oh, okay.
Because open RAN means... The open RAN is... People get virtual RAN and open RAN mixed up.
Open RAN is
actually opening the interfaces. So what open RAN would allow you to do is... use an Ericsson baseband system like this one, where they've partnered with Intel to do something that's virtualized. So it's their software on Hewlett-Packard hardware that's based on Intel processors. And then you open the interface that goes to the radio unit, and you buy a radio unit from whoever, Nokia, let's say. Yeah, that's open. That's the open RAN bit, is that part. So,
but the significance of this Cloud RAN is more just the virtualized nature of it.
It's virtualized, so...
But doesn't that... Okay, so I completely take...
So virtualized is hardware and software separation. So whereas in the past, Ericsson...
So it's like a step towards it. It facilitates that commoditization. If everything's softwareized...
You're still getting the radios from Ericsson in this system, yeah?
But if more of it is softwareized, then the stuff that's softwareized can run, in principle, on a range of different hardware. That's what I'm saying about how it's a sort of step towards the open RAN thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's the virtualized open RAN, isn't it? People miss that part out. You know?
Yeah, okay, cool.
But the open, bit is the interface between
ignorance.
Different elements, which is allowing you to use different... So, I mean, the big thing about open RAN, the way it started off, is actually using different radio unit suppliers from your baseband suppliers. That's the big deal, I think, about open RAN, is that you can have one radio unit supplier and then a different company for baseband.
And here you're still using
Ericsson for... It's still Ericsson's baseband software, and it's still Ericsson's radios, but Intel's coming in and doing the baseband hardware, essentially.
Fair enough.
Whereas in the past, with a traditional setup, you'd have had much more tightly integrated Ericsson software running on processes that Ericsson's helped design,
basically Ericsson branded, even if they had a bit of help.
Yeah.
So what is the significance of having these Intel branded chips in there where they didn't before?
Well, I mean...
Is it the commoditization? Is it a step towards open RAN? Or am I oversimplifying it?
It might be a step towards... It depends what you mean. I mean, open RAN's like such a hazy
term.
But...
It's the commoditization part of it that always makes me think open RAN. It rings open RAN alarm bells.
Well, one biggest consequence is that Ericsson's no longer selling the hardware, is it?
Yeah, and why would it do that?
Because it's been told to by customers.
And why are they telling it to do that?
Because they think that virtualized RAN is something that would bring advantages.
Yes. One of which, I presume, it means include opening up their choice.
No, not necessarily. I mean, the virtual RAN, you can...
I'll stop labouring
for instance, what I mean, this is a big question, is whether anybody's going to want to do this and build a cloud RAN, as Ericsson's calling it. But what you could feasibly do, the people who think that this is a good idea would say, so in a traditional radio mast, you've got your radio at the top and your baseband processing takes place usually at the bottom. And when you virtualize it, you can take those, you know, you can sort of re-architect it so that you move these processing units, if you like, into what they call baseband hotels, like data center facilities.
Baseband hotels,
I've never heard that before. It's just a data center. But that's the whole point. That's the whole reason for doing it.
So you
consolidate your...
Our audio is all different now.
Your baseband processors in a data center, and then you're breaking the link between the radio and the base. So at the moment, you need a baseband processor for every... You need to have some kind of baseband deployment for every single radio that you've got, yeah?
Yeah.
If you separate it, you could have like lots and lots of different radio units, let's say, served by a data center with less baseband equipment in it, running Ericsson's software. And that's where people say the cost savings might come from, yeah? So the people who say that it might be operationally better to do are generally looking at that. Now, the downside is that you need a lot of investment in the front hall part of the network, the front hall being the connection between...
And so that was a thing from this Ericsson one, wasn't it? They were talking about some other bit of technology they've got that... I probably got this from reading your thing. Can you remember off the top of your head? I'm trying to read it. I've got to say, these contact lenses are great.
Well, for
long distance vision. But
there's something called Cloud Link, but
there we are.
But that's not the front hall interface. That's something to make it easier. So if you're introducing this new setup with a traditional RAN, I think they're saying that Cloud Link makes it easier to kind of manage the two together, basically. So you don't have to move straight from a traditional RAN to a cloud RAN. You
can use this backward compatible.
Yeah, you can sort of use this Cloud Link technology to sort of make sure
that
everything
works.
That's
not the same as what you were just
talking about. The front hall interface, which is the whole sort of the enemy as far as the Open RAN community is concerned, is CPRI. That's the interface that's the whole reason.
So that's like a bus, like USB or something like that, is it?
CPRI is the whole reason that the Open RAN thing exists almost. That's this semi-proprietary interface that links your radio unit to your baseband, essentially.
So it is like a bus.
And the people that own that technology, if you like, are Ericsson, Nokia, Huawei, and NEC. It tends to get implemented in semi-proprietary ways, so a lot of bits of it aren't. You have to basically take the same radio unit. You have to use the same supplier for radio units that you're kind of using for your baseband equipment, because otherwise it's just sort of incompatible because of the way CPRI gets implemented by the vendors. And what Open RAN is all about is getting rid of that CPRI interface and replacing it with something called Open Front Hall, which is like the first thing to have come out of the Open RAN, what's it called, the O-RAN Alliance, which is the standards group. And that's what would allow you to then have a different radio unit supplier from your baseband supplier.
Cool.
That's what Open RAN is. So the problem at the moment with doing the virtual RAN and doing what I've just said and having data centers full of Intel and Hewlett-Packard hardware with Ericsson software sitting on top, and they might be serving lots and lots of radio units, is that you need a lot of fiber. That CPRI interface is quite demanding, I think, in terms of what it...
Bandwidth heavy.
In terms of bandwidth. It's bandwidth heavy. So you need fiber basically connecting all of your sites to that data facility.
Anything that's proprietary and anything that is not subject to competition is normally going to be fat and inefficient.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to make it more efficient.
Exactly. Yeah, probably. Yeah. And I don't know if Open Front Hall is necessarily more efficient, to be honest with you. I don't think
that's what you're leading up to.
No, it's just more. It's just open.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's necessarily... I know there are companies that are trying to make it more efficient, so you wouldn't necessarily need fiber as well. You could actually do it with microwave maybe or other technologies. But I don't think the Open Front Hall is necessary. Okay. You still need a lot of investment in the front hall network to do this. And you also need the data facilities as well. It's like you can't just, you know, at the moment operators tend to have, as I say, their baseband units at the bottom of the mast site, yeah? Now, if you're going to take those and move them into a baseband hotel, as they call it, then you're going to have to have somewhere to...
Didn't you have a headline making reference to the Hotel California?
Not me, no.
Oh, I'm sure I saw something like reading about how...
Maybe years ago,
you can never leave.
Not recently.
Some reference to the sort of vendor lock-in. you can check in any time you want,
done,
but you can never leave.
I might have done that a while ago.
Sounded promising. Maybe that was a Paul thing. He quite likes those kind of cultural references in his headlines. Just like he likes my Brexit stories.
Very much so, yeah.
Which we'll come to in a minute. look, let's move that on. That's an excellent summary of it all, and I'm so pleased you're here because I would have butchered the whole fucking thing. The long and short of it is it does look good for Nokia. One comment I made in my sort of short summary at the end of my piece was looking at their respective share prices. So in the past month or so, I've got about a tenner's worth of Nokia and about 20 quid's worth of Ericsson. I'm probably about even. My Nokia's up about a quid or two.
Right.
My Ericsson's down about a quid or two.
Okay.
Now, whether that's just because of product launches like this or all kinds of other stuff that we don't understand because we're not
I didn't see what happened after the product launch to their share price.
I didn't look explicitly then. But what I'm saying is that the momentum in terms of share price is in Nokia's favour. Whereas Ericsson's having crept up for a bit for most of this year has sort of gone off.
I mean, I think equity analysts, I'm not saying they don't get this stuff because they clearly do, probably more than I do. But
it's stupid.
I don't know if this has moved the needle that much for them at the moment. I think Nokia's been doing quite well in the last few weeks because they had a very, very, if you remember the last set of earnings, it was very, very good, yeah?
Mm.
They're doing really well on the fixed line side and optical.
Maybe they're just catching up. Maybe they've only just heard our podcast about it and they're changing their models on the back of it.
I think mobile's doing quite... I mean, I think there are signs of... Even before this announcement, there were signs of momentum on the mobile side, which we hadn't seen before.
Cool.
You know, well, they're winning stuff.
And I'm genuinely pleased. Not just because bless them and all that, but because we need it, man.
Well, this is the important thing about the announcement, actually, is that you need a strong Nokia in the market because it's consolidated enough as it is, yeah?
Mm.
And if we don't have two strong European vendors or two strong non-Chinese vendors, then, I mean, the Open RAN guys, bless them, you know, but they're not going to be a big force in the market for a few years at least.
Quite.
I mean, they might
for
who knows,
the
by the mid-2020s,
will there is.
That, you know, and it might not be for the right reasons if it is just political will that's pushing them along anyway, which is not a good way to go, I don't think.
It shouldn't be the primary driver, should it?
No, it shouldn't.
We're not goddamn communists.
You know, and if they succeed, great, good luck to them. But they're small, they're sort of, they don't have a scale at the moment, really. So we need a strong Nokia. Mm.
Good. Right, I'm going to move it on. I wrote a story yesterday. I wrote it quite late in the day because it kept sort of evolving over the course of the day. Headline was, E reignites Brexit debate by charging for data roaming in Europe. So obviously, ever since Brexit happened, and certainly since it was completed at the start of this year, everyone's had their eyes peeled for bad shit that's going to happen as a result, or at least those people who were hostile to it. So I've never made my position secret on this podcast. Now, I'm all right for Manchego now because I'm doing the
Manchego.
Fucking podcast, aren't I? And you're putting Manchego in my face.
I don't think you've got to get into the spirit of this MWC thing at all.
I tell you what I'm getting into the spirit of. It's doing the podcast in like the 20 minutes we've got left. That's the spirit I'm in. So people, there's a certain subset of people, you know, 48% of the country voted to remain. Fair play, I respect that vote. The people I like to wind up are the ones who, like, 5 years later are still bitching about it. So they're the people I categorise as Ramoners. Not all Remainers. Remainer and Ramona are not synonymous.
Mm.
Ramona is Remainers who still can't get over it. People like Andrew Adonis, people like sort of Guardian readers who just are on Twitter banging on about. And anytime something happens, they're like, oh, this is all catastrophic. And they discount things like us trade deals and us getting Nissan building Qashqais in Sunderland and all that sort of thing. Anyway, it's all just tribal bullshit. But I just like winding them up because I'm a bit of a twat in that way. So it's not like roaming is just perfect. It's just such a clear narrative. If roaming's reintroduced, they're like, see what you've done to this country? See what you've done to us? This colossal, monumental act of collective self-harm? They say things like that because they think it sounds clever.
And they've been right, haven't they?
Well, Yeah, it's not the second time you've chucked that rhetorical question in my face. So yesterday, the chronology was interesting because the first story that broke yesterday was O2 announcing they were putting a 25 gig cap on roaming, not just on unlimited contracts. Like, I'm on a 50 gig contract because I worked out that was the most cost efficient way. I'm on a 50 gig contract and then I gift data to the rest of my family who are on fuck all.
The data lord.
Yeah, I'm the data boss, data daddy. And so, in principle, if I got to 25, well, I'm with EE, so that's another matter. But if I was with O2 and I got to 25, then they start charging me £3-odd a gigabyte after that.
Yeah.
And The Independent and a few other papers got that in the morning, and they were going with it, and they were really sort of overselling it and going, oh, my God, look what they've done. They've reintroduced roaming charges. Whereas actually those caps, I realised from researching it subsequently, chatting to people we know at Vodafone, that sort of thing, it's quite normal, those caps. Everyone's got fair use caps. Obviously, that's a bit of a woolly term, fair use.
Yeah.
And any time there's a different fair use for roaming than there is at home, then that's some kind of roaming restriction, you know, by definition. But the O2 story is just a storm in a teacup. But I was going to write it up. I got in touch with O2. I got a statement from them. I was like, fuck it, I'll write that up. And I was sort of halfway through doing it. This is about the time I'd normally send the newsletter, like about 2. And then this EE thing started breaking. And the difference, what EE did is they actually said, we are going to charge full stop. If you roam as of next year, 2022, if you roam, we're going to charge you £2, what was it, a day? I think so.
£2 a day?
£2 a day just to use your allowance. Yeah, it was. It's £2 a day just to use your allowance. So you can use your... So what I can do now, I'm on EE.
Yeah.
I can go to the Canaries where my family live and I don't even need to think about it. It treats me exactly the same as if I was still in the UK.
Yeah.
Now, if I go to Canaries next year, they're going to charge me £2 a day on top of that.
So even if you just used...
Just not as bad as before.
Even if you just used 1 megabyte... On one day when you were in the Canary Islands, you get charged £2 for that extra.
Presumably, yeah.
So anything you use at all, like looking at one web page, you're going to get charged an extra £2.
Yeah, well, I presume, I don't know how it manifests itself, but I presume it'd be like a digital switch. You're like, do you want to be able to data roam?
Yeah, it has to start somewhere. Yeah, if not, it doesn't work, yeah.
But is it... I don't understand. I mean, there's a big difference between watching how metered it is, Netflix, and I don't have the answer for you. Or just looking at one BBC news story overseas.
I don't have a definitive answer.
Back in the day, you would land, and then at the airport, your phone would start saying, you would have no reception, and then eventually it would say, hey, welcome to this country. And then you'd have to say yes or no. Like, do you want to roam?
Yeah. And do you want to pay for it?
Yeah,
but back in those days, it used to be quite expensive. You used to run up quite big bills.
So now it'll be £2, yeah.
But £2 for anything you want.
Yeah,
you know,
I guess it's
£2. It's a flat rate. £2 within, like rewind.
Ian, I said
story.
It already. It's within your contract. So £2 to be able to use your contract in Europe.
Yeah.
So okay. If you're on a
per day.
Well, yeah. So let's say you're on a 10 gig a month contract.
Yeah.
You can still use 10 gig abroad, but you've got to pay £2 a day to do it.
It probably includes calls.
So, a 2-week holiday, you're paying an extra £28 that month.
I would
if
imagine
you use data
so.
Every day for a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, that's my interpretation of it.
Well, that's pretty hefty, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is and it isn't. It's still, as Pierre says, it's better than before, but it's worse than the current situation.
Yeah.
Now, the really tasty bit about it is, you know, from those of us who write about telecoms, like most of the mainstream press were writing about it, and they haven't got a fucking clue.
Yeah.
But we think, is this because of wholesale changes? Because if EE and whoever else is getting charged more buying SFR or whatever, or Movistar, then they're just passing on the charge, aren't they?
Yeah.
Then that is a Brexit story. But it turns out they're not, to the best of my knowledge, thus far, on the grounds
of my
exhaustive
research. Well, I
don't think
those deals ever had anything to do with the whole EU campaign against roaming anyway. I mean, operators just figure out what those...
But I mean, the EU forced operators to
stop... They forced wholesale rates down, the EU.
Well, they forced them to zero. I mean, in terms of termination rates for roaming.
Yeah.
They forced them to not charge a premium for roaming termination rates, didn't they?
Yeah.
So anyway, and to the best of my knowledge, that hasn't changed from my exhaustive research of getting on the phone for half an hour. So basically, he's decided.
You got on the phone for half an hour, though.
That's not like me, is it?
That's pretty good.
Sherlock?
No.
I mean, if you get it from a reliable source, then you're probably right, then. They're those things.
Yeah, and more than one. A multiple source to Ian.
What about all of them?
Goddamn Woodward and Bernstein on this.
He says
shit.
A load of Manchego in his mouth.
I know. You're loving that Manchego. I don't know why you're offering it.
I do like Manchego.
So, yes. So not
a great
day.
Spoke to a couple of the operators.
I spoke to all of them.
Okay.
So not a great day for E. They're the only ones who'd done it. Vodafone said they got no plans to introduce any roaming charges, but they've got a cap, which is basically similar to the O2 thing. The funny thing is the O2 thing looked like a real media scrum. You know, they were getting lots of adverse publicity over a very small thing.
Well, their cap's high, yeah?
What's yeah, 25 gig.
That's a high cap.
Exactly. The canned quote they gave me is like 1% of people will ever get anywhere near that.
Unless you travel for like 6 months, yeah.
Yeah, what are you doing on holiday that you're racking up 25 gig?
Actually, it's per month anyway, yeah.
I mean, can't you get on some Wi-Fi? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And three, they've always had a really generous roaming thing, but they've got a cap of 12 gig now. So that actually would have been a bigger story than the O2 one. And Vodafone has had about a 25 gig cap for most of the year, I think. I think they changed their terms earlier in the year, but the press didn't get hold of it. So
why do you think they're changing it? I mean, if the wholesale rates haven't changed,
I think it is profiteering. And I don't use that in a pejorative way. I'm a free, less.
They're no longer bound by the laws.
Yeah, they're not compelled to do it, so they're choosing to do it. Hence, it's profiteering. They're entitled to profiteer, but they've got to take the rough with the smooth. And EE has had to take a big PR hit yesterday. Whether you know how long that will last. The other weird thing about it is it only applies to new customers and existing customers renewing their contract.
Right.
So I'm on a rolling contract because I'm on a SIM only.
Yep.
So they don't really try and rope you into any like big.
So you can go and have your little holiday in the Canary Islands and consume as much as you want.
Yeah,
whilst other
within
people
my contract.
Up,
yeah, because I'm certainly never going to upgrade now. They're hassling me. They're sending me these little sort of BSS text messages, going, "Oh, you can upgrade," and then. You're still not very good at it. They go, you can upgrade, click through here to see what the offers are, and there's fuck all coming up.
Yeah.
So their BSS, their whole CRM stuff is not very good on that. But it could just be that there's nothing great they can offer me. I'm already on such a great SIM-only deal. I buy my handsets for me and my family just up front. I'm not looking for financing or anything like that.
I remember they went through a phase of trying to sell me Apple sort of headphones, the Beats ones, for ages. I used to get text messages, and then you went to the store and they were always sold out.
Right.
They never had any in stock anyway.
So they're actually creating a negative consumer experience by doing that, aren't they?
I mean, that's why they're shit compared to the OTT companies. But
yeah, well, that's one reason.
I mean, I suspect they just rationalised it that because other companies are doing the same thing, there's nothing to lose, really.
But they're not in the UK. EE's the first to move.
Yeah, but they'll have thought about this and thought, well, they're introducing caps.
Well, they'll definitely
If we move, they'll probably start attaching rates as well. And
yeah, I got some sort of comments just sent in. I didn't ask for them, but Kesterman from CCS Insight
emailed me.
I didn't put them in my story just because I'd sort of already said similar stuff to what he said. But he did sum it up well, and just going, they will have thought about it. They will have made a sort of cost benefit analysis and decided, let's just take the fucking hit. This is paraphrasing him at this stage.
he has good comments.
Yeah, let's just take the hit. Because it's worth it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that name of names, I get the impression, I've had that impression confirmed within BT as well. So, yeah, I mean, fair enough. You know, you got to find some money where you can get it. I just wonder whether or not this is going to be worth it for them, because we'll see how long. I mean, it could be it's gone away already. It was just one day's media for Raw.
Yeah.
And then most people, their enduring brand relationship with EE is more or less unchanged.
Yeah.
In which case, it's a win for them.
Yeah.
But if a significant number of people are like, fuck EE on the back of this, then I wonder if those few increments of £2 are worth it.
It possibly depends on how quickly the other operators react to it and decide to do it, whether they're going to do the
same
thing or not.
That's a big one.
If Vodafone and O2, and I suspect 3 won't make any changes, but the ones that are likelier to start introducing rates are in response because they've seen what's happened and think, oh, well, maybe we should as well, a Vodafone and O2. Now, if they don't...
Well, Vodafone, I got a specific quote from Vodafone saying they've... Well, it's one of those slightly... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
One of those slightly equivocating things.
Yeah.
But they've got no plans. But they're still going to look bad. And I promise you, Vodafone, if having told me you got no plans, next month you put it up,
If I worked for Vodafone and I was smart and I was in a senior position, I'd say, let's not follow BT here and do the same thing.
Yeah.
And let's lean on the press a lot to
say how lovely we are.
To try and sort of make out how bad this is. That will be, for me, a smart sort of strategic move, because they could lose... You know, 28 quid, if you're going to go away for a 14-day holiday, or if you're a business traveller, you're away a lot using data, which we are. I mean, for me, I'm an EE customer. That actually puts me off being an EE customer, because if I'm away, how often are we away when we can travel?
Well, it's not just 28 quid, it's 28 quid per person. So if it's a small family, it's a ton.
Well, it doesn't matter the family, because that's only a bit of each year. But how much business travel do we do normally when we're not in this situation? We normally do a lot.
Well, we're not having to buy Gordon's G&Ts from Tesco.
We're away a lot of the year, a couple of months of the year. It's going to add up to a lot of extra money. To be an EE customer and to pay these roaming rates, actually. Yeah. So it would make me change, actually. I'm not hugely delighted with EE anyway. It's not like they give me anything extra that I couldn't get from Vodafone or O2. You know, it's not like they're sending cakes around to my house every Friday night and bags of Doritos. So be wary.
You know
be
what
wary,
to do.
Because I'm thinking of moving
you
now.
You heard it first here, EE. Cakes.
And Doritos.
Yes. I'm going to say one more thing before I move it on, because we're rapidly running out of time. I was very deliberately Remainer baiting in my story, because I just get sport from it. I know. I get sport from it. And I think I might have said it a minute ago. You know, there's people who voted Remain. That's fine. That's a complete respect to a democracy. But there's people who 5 years later won't shut the fuck up about it. And they're the people I call Remainers. And then just in the final sentence of my story, I wrote, the bad news for Remainers is that this move is not the inevitable consequence of Brexit. They would have us believe it is. As I think we've just discussed, it's not because of wholesale rates. It's just the choice that these companies are making. And then I finished by saying, but that won't stop the moaning, of course. And then lo and behold, someone called Alex sends me a message going, Mr. Pacino. You just see him sort of perching his glasses on the end of his nose when he writes it. When reading an article about the introduction of roaming charges in Europe, this is a sort of points of view voice from the 80s, isn't it? It's Alex from Tunbridge Wells. When reading an article about the introduction of roaming charges in Europe, I'd expect you to leave your self-evident contempt for those who vote differently from you for yourself, which is obviously inaccurate. I'm not contemptuous of them. I'm contemptuous of the people who keep moaning, like Alex from Tunbridge Wells. And he goes, it turns your otherwise fairly good article into an opinionated piece of garbage. Which makes me think, garbage. I mean, that's a bit American, isn't it? You might as well say trash. You've got to say rubbish if you're English.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he goes, stick to the facts, stick to the story, be a journalist. End of. The end of is my edition.
You've been told, Scott.
And I just responded right on cue. So I just finished saying that's not going to stop the moaning.
Yep.
And I knew someone, just sometimes they can't resist the bait that you're dangling. And so thank you for that, Alex. You've actually made my day with that. Okay, so moving on, we're going to have to make this very quick because Pierre's got to do another recording. I know, it's shocking, isn't it? Okay, I've got...
I kind of feel we're like second priority here nowadays, do you? I mean, it's
these
got
people,
bigger commitments.
These people
to do.
Who will remain
who
nameless, but
keep,
you know who you are.
You keep intruding into our time every day.
I know, they just decided we're turning up.
We could have started earlier.
You know?
Yeah, or they could start later.
I think it's disgraceful, to be honest with you.
We always started that time anyway.
I'm going to moan. And there's no point in you pushing back. It'll just make me moan more.
Ian has to
It'll
leave
make
early.
Me moan as much as Alex from Tunbridge Wells. So anyway, I better get moving, but it's fine. This is just a little self-indulgent Scott bit, so it's probably just as well I'm constrained. I wrote, the headline was, UK government bid to censor the internet faces growing resistance. So this is about a new law that's called the Online Safety Bill. I know, you can already tell it's got one of those sort of Orwellian kind of names, isn't it? And I said, the online safety bill is part of the UK government's, quote, commitment to make the UK the safest place on earth to be online while defending free expression. Problem is, you always get this. When people are being censorious, they will say, nothing's more important to me than freedom of speech. And then there's a but.
Yeah.
And then they go, I love freedom of speech, but it's not without consequences or obligations or all that sort of thing. And of course, as soon as you attach consequences, obligations, restrictions, parameters, it's not fucking free anymore, is it? It's not freedom of speech. It's a bit of speech that we've allowed under our arbitrary rules that we just pulled out of our arse. And so, so then you've got these people, you've got this group. What are they called? Oh, it's gone. Anyway, one of them is headed up by an MP called David Davis, who's very good, strong on freedom of speech. I don't know, you might have reservations about him in other areas.
He was Brexit Secretary, wasn't he, originally?
He was the original one before Dominic Raab.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just seems like a principled guy. He's like a proper Conservative, like we used to have back in the day, as opposed to Boris Johnson or any of the people around him. And that's not to say that I think they're necessarily always right. I've got some time for sort of Bojo's sort of strand of more malleable, more adaptive, more flexible Toryism, because sometimes doctrinal Toryism doesn't work.
By the seat of your pants Toryism, you mean?
Yeah. Sort of. I heard Hancock talking about seat of your pants. It's just gone to him, yeah, sorry about that. And Bojo's gone, yeah, don't worry about it, mate. Happens to the best of us. I mean, Bojo's not about to give Hancock a hard time for putting it about, is he?
No.
Anyway, before I get sued, I'll leave that there. But so David Davis got involved, who is principled, and I know nothing about his private life. But that probably means that he's kept it more or less under control. There's a woman who heads up a thing called Index on Censorship. So that kind of speaks for itself. She's very anti-censorship. And there's a QC called Gavin Miller, spelt AR, which I think implies he's Scottish, as does Gavin. And they've all just come out and just gone, this is all bullshit, to paraphrase them. And at the core...
Oh, they've laid into this law.
You what?
They've laid into this.
Yeah, they've laid into it, and they just said it's terrible for freedom of speech, it's terrible for civil liberties.
Yeah.
Because what this law basically does is it empowers Ofcom. They've given Ofcom these censorship powers. These are quite recent.
Yeah.
This is all really underreported, or it could just be that I haven't seen the reporting, but I think it's underreported. They've given Ofcom these powers of censorship they never used to have. Ofcom just employed this guy out of Amazon to be what... This is my interpretation, their chief digital censor.
Yeah.
And so Ofcom used to be just about keeping an eye on telcos, yeah?
Yeah.
Now it's keeping an eye on everyone who's online ever. You and I, Pierre on his phone right now. Whatever you're writing there, Pierre, even if it's in French, Ofcom's going to have a look at that. And they're going to be like, qu'est-ce que c'est? And if they're not happy, they'll censor it, whatever French for censor is. What's French for censor?
Censor.
Censor. Why?
Censor. No.
Censor is a white wine. Or a region.
Censor.
Do you think you could be censored in Censor?
Censor.
You're not allowed to talk about Loire white wine.
As long as you haven't had anything to drink.
So I'm pleased they're pushing back. And they've come up with all these things. That are like, there are ways... Look, the central issue is, and I'll sort of start wrapping up because we've got to... Central issue is with all these laws that come in that claim to be trying to protect us from harm, is there already tons of laws about protecting us from harm? You can't, you know, I've said it loads of times on the pod, I can't just suddenly go on Twitter and say, let's go and trash Ian Morris's house. There are already laws protecting you from me saying that. Although I've said it lots of times on this pod and got away with it. So how effective those laws are is another matter. So I think my feeling, and I completely concede that I'm quite sort of dialed in on this and quite hypersensitive on it. But my feeling is that these extra laws don't really protect anyone. They're just a power grab by the government. And as I said, my summarising sentence, it's already illegal to do much of the stuff this bill has supposedly been created to prevent. So it's hard to see this as anything other than yet another state power grab. at a time when public sentiment is understandably concerned with safety, which is obviously a reference to the Rona. So everyone's kind of shitting themselves about the Rona. Everyone's kind of biased in favour of safety right now. And I worry that this is a time where governments, not just UK, but US and elsewhere, they're just like, fuck it, we might as well do some other stuff in the name of safety, which basically increases the power of the state. And everyone's just going to wave it through because it's like a wartime thing. Like during wartime, you can wave all sorts of stuff through. People are like, let's just stop the bombs dropping.
Yeah.
Which is totally understandable.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I talk to people more.
Well, pandemic's the same, isn't it? You
exactly.
wave a lot of shit through, and then it just stays there for 10 years afterwards, like not being able to open pubs.
These emergency powers.
Yeah.
You know, things like, as I said at the start, you know, a vaccine passport. If we allow a vaccine passport to happen now, it's not going to go away.
No.
5 years' time, they'll still go, well, how's your health looking?
Well, the whole concept
of... How many burgers have you had this week?
The whole idea of lockdowns isn't going to go away. I mean, they're even talking about reintroducing it for flu now, a flu epidemic later in the year.
Yes, because that's probably going to be a much bigger deal.
It's worse than coronavirus. Mm. So, and if you tell people a few years ago, let's have a lockdown because flu might be bad this year, what would the reaction have been?
Yeah, they told you to go and fuck yourself.
But now they'll all go, oh, okay, yeah, we'll understand that.
I know. Well, that's exactly
that's
it.
That's a terrifying thing.
So the public threshold for these things is lowered.
Yeah.
It will come back up again so that you can imagine the political urgency to get as much of this stuff through.
Yeah.
So I'm really pleased that people like David Davis are hassling
good for
about
him,
this.
Yeah.
Let's see where it goes. And I don't apologise about bringing it up every now and then, even though it's not very telecomsy. Because it's digital economy.
Yeah, it's still Ofcom, isn't it?
Still, well, quite. They're making it telecomsy. Right. I think we're at our time now. So, Pierre, you're not going to have to upset our colleagues who are more important than us.
Yeah, into our time.
And we'll wrap it up here. And thank you for watching. We're going to do next week's one a little bit early.
Mm-hmm. Thursday.
And that'll be a...
Why are we doing it on Thursday again?
Because I'm coming in on Thursday anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, me being lazy. Just not coming in twice. I'm being honest. Well, we were going to do something else, wasn't it, on Thursday? But I had that diary clash.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, so thanks a lot for listening. And make sure you join us on Thursday.